Hello and welcome everybody to another episode of the World's Greatest Podcast. It is, of course, That's the Way the Cookie Crumbles. We are back, and as you can tell from a distinct lack of mouth breathing, Jim is not here this week. Stan is, of course, again in the Middle East, and apparently deals are being done. They've seen what's happened to Everton today. More on that later. And they've panicked. They phoned in the special man, or the special one, whatever we can call Jim. Jose can be the special one, Jim can be the special man. Take that in whatever terms you'd like to.
They have. They've called in the big shots, big cheese. They've sent him over. To try and stop City getting any points taken off them, because they might have a hell of a lot if what we're seeing to Everton and Forest is going to happen to City.
100%. And like we said, more on that later with Everton and the points deductions. But there is only one place to start. Stan, the Premier League title race is forever changing at the top, and Arsenal have gone top of the table. Prior to this weekend, it was in Liverpool's hands. It is now in Arsenal's hands. First and foremost, Stan, are Arsenal going to win the Premier League?
I would say no. I still think, I've never changed from saying it's City. I know they're third out of the three-horse race currently, but I think they've got the know-how. I think they've got the best squad. I think the most balance in defence and attack. I think Arsenal's defence is very strong, but maybe they lack some goals. I think Liverpool's defence is pretty weak, a little bit open, but they have loads of goals in the 11 and obviously options off the bench too. So I think City have got the know-how. I think they've got the best balanced squad. I think they've got the best balance in terms of play style. And as we've said, Cork City go on the 10-11 game winning streak at some point. They've not had it yet, so we're all expecting that to happen. I think they'll probably just get over the line, especially if Arsenal's head turns with Champions League and Liverpool's with Europa.
So Stan, sticking with City, sticking with his gut, and like Stan, if you were on Deal or No Deal, you wouldn't swap that last box, would you, lad? You'd stick with your...
Definitely not. I'm sticking with the one I chose.
Exactly. It was in your hands. And like we said earlier, it is in Arsenal's hands. And they went away to Brighton, who themselves, Stan, have been a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde team this season. But nonetheless, Kai Havertz, ninth league goal of the season. I have saw a lot of people saying he's redeemed himself, Kai Havertz, for his ninth league goal of the season. And for £65 million, Stan, I'm going to want a lot more than that. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose he's done okay. I guess maybe getting double figures goals for a guy that's played up front for the most of the time as well. He's all right, although, like you say, it was a lot of money. It's still probably not the striker that Arsenal necessarily need. I think they'll still maybe be looking at an Ivan Toney or somebody like that come the summer. But considering how he started, he was getting pelters in pre-season, never mind before the season even started. And, you know, for a guy for maybe end up with double figures goals, you know, it's maybe par for him. And the Arsenal performance, I just thought it was professional. I thought it was comfortable. Brighton made it easy for them, but Arsenal were really, really professional. It was a really good performance, I think, all across the board. I mean, even celebrating when they were 3-0 up, blocking shots from Brighton, really wanting that clean sheet to, you know, being clinical in those moments. I thought Trossard scored a great goal to make it 3-0, and, you know, definitely won't do the goal difference any harm, which I think he's 10 better than the closest team. So that could help them. Could be a final day one, could be a goal difference one. We've seen it happen before.
Definitely. And something that we haven't seen before, nice little segue there, Stan, is that we have never seen a three-horse race in the Premier League. So we've not actually seen it go down to a three-horse race on the last day of the season. So maybe a first time ever in the Premier League this year if the teams can't actually put the other one away. And that would be historic, and really, you could maybe say kicking the teeth to the argument that Man City are monopolising the Prem.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be great if there's a last day, and, you know, depending on what's happening as it stands, you know, all three end up top at some point during that last game. That would be good. But Arsenal have got the hardest fixtures. We spoke about this last week, but I also think they're playing the best out of the three, which kind of contradicts what I said about City. But, you know, there's what is a 7-8 league games left. I think City could easily win the next 7-8, in which case they'll win the title, because Liverpool and Arsenal just aren't going to do that. But it is possible that City do. So, you know, Arsenal are first. They've got the tougher fixtures. It's probably set up brilliantly with City being that third team, but probably most likely to go on the run. I think, you know, if you can have a 1-2 or 3, 1-2 and 3 with 7 games left as an experiment to see what happens, I think you probably have it in this order with Arsenal leading the pack, but with the tougher fixtures, obviously Liverpool sandwiched in between as well. They'll fancy the chances, obviously being 50% likely to win it, according to Opta this time last week, which is crazy because a week later they're not even top of the table. So, you know, it'll change. None of them play each other in the league. Will they play each other in a Champions League semi-final? Two legs, that could take a lot out of them, with Liverpool then maybe capitalising on that. But yeah, I think the thing for Arsenal is they've got United and Everton last two games, which should guarantee them 6 points for both of them, stopping Liverpool winning the title. So they're going to get at least 6 points, I would hope, with both those sides doing a Gerrard into Drogba at Anfield a few years ago to set them up for a 1-0. So yeah, but we'll see. It's exciting. I mean, who do you think will win it, and do you think it will be all three on the last day, or do you think one of them are going to tail off?
The Premier League purist in me says, why can't it be all three on the last day, because they are all playing really well. But the senile old man in me is now saying that that cannot possibly happen. And like we keep reiterating on this podcast, that Man City haven't put that run together yet, and they're still, given what they've showed us in the past, they always find a way and they always become just a solid unit and just impossible to beat. And I was listening to someone on the radio and they're saying that whoever wins the Prem this year is going to win it with quite a low tally in terms of what we've been seeing from previous regimes. And I know we've been spoiled by having 100 points and 97 and 98 points, I believe, the year before. But yeah, why not, I think. But again, my head says it can't really go all the way. But Arsenal showing a bit more than what they had last year, definitely off the bench. Like I said, someone like Trossard coming off the bench, they've beefed up the squad. He scored against his old club, and someone that he'd fallen out with, Stan, Roberto De Zerbi, he's been linked with jobs here, there and everywhere. But Brighton at the minute, they've only got one win in the last 7 Premier League games. So if he is to leave Brighton, Stan, and not get maybe this war chest that he's demanding from Tony Bloom after they turned over £105 million profit, which I presume he's not very happy with at the minute, given that he's desperately after a centre-forward by all accounts. What is Roberto De Zerbi's realistic ceiling if he is to leave in the summer?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure about him. I would actually go as far as saying the jury's out, to be honest. I mean, I know he did really well last season, but I mean, they've not played very well. I've said it for a while. I think it shows how poor the Premier League is, that this United side 6 and this Brighton side, if it feels from a neutral perspective, have hardly won a game, are also sat in the European positions. I feel like in seasons gone by that they would both have just been punished and would both be floating around mid-table, but they somehow find themselves with a chance of Europa League football next season. So if De Zerbi gets that again, you know, no matter the lack of clean sheets and some horrible performances, a lot of injuries too.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have dropped off. You know, if he ends up getting Europa League football, even Europa League conference football, for Brighton to do that in back-to-back seasons and De Zerbi to drag them to both is something obviously to be applauded. But in terms of moving on, I mean, Ornstein's distant De Zerbi from Liverpool. Could he end up at Barca? I don't know. I think he's a bit of a wild card. I'm not sure Barca Bayern would take a risk on him, to be honest. Could he go back to Italy? I don't know. Juventus with Allegri, I'm not sure what that landscape's like there. I could see him going there. And I could honestly see him taking a jump to United or something like that if obviously Ratcliffe, Brailsford, etc., Berardi decide to part ways with Ten Hag, which I also think is 50-50. So it's going to be a bit of a weird summer. I'm not actually sure. It wouldn't surprise me if he just stays where he is, to be honest, and tries to rebuild, go again next season, another year of Europa League footy, Europa Conference, whatever it is. Hopefully less injuries. A third season, it should be bedded in by then, and hopefully, you know, he'll be looking to do something really special and show why he was such hot property last summer and his stock was so high.
Yeah, you mentioned Ornstein there, and I know Bayern Munich have definitely distanced themselves from him. I wouldn't have been surprised if he went to Bayern and then after 3 months he completely just self-destructed and said, nah, I've had enough of this. But I just think that a lot of clubs that we've mentioned then earlier on, your Barca's, your Juve's, with De Zerbi having this release clause similar to Ruben Amorim, who we're probably going to talk about in a little minute when we mention Liverpool, is that these guys have 15, 20 million out buyout clauses. And looking at clubs' track records in the past, Barcelona, who are renting out the Nou Camp Stadium for people to have a kickabout and get married there because they're that skint. Are they really going to pay 15, 20 million realistically for a manager who doesn't really have a proven track record and someone who has shown explosive tendencies? And I'll go as far to say, I think it was disgusting that he called out Tony Bloom in the press, someone who actually gave him a chance in England, because it's a good job, the Brighton job. And Graham Potter, no matter what he did at Chelsea, gave him a more than a good foundation to build on there, and he has done. And he's took them further than Potter ever could, which is testament to him. And that turnover is not realistic long term. And De Zerbi's basically said in the press, I need more money to stay basically with all these other teams. Otherwise, I'm going to go because I'm better than this. And I think he needs to stop, well, to quote a very American phrase, drinking his own Kool-Aid and basically buying into his own stock, because he's not that good yet. And it was a quite frankly embarrassing performance from Brighton against Roma over two legs. I think they got beat 5-1 over two legs, which is just going to Roma and losing 4-0 for a team as good as Brighton stand that we've saw week in, week out is unacceptable. But someone we're not going to see week in, week out, Stan, moving on. Jurgen Klopp, Liverpool, he's got 8 games left. Liverpool are on the tails of Arsenal. They're only second on goal difference. They did win again this weekend. But, Stan, Liverpool, are they going to run everyone right down to the wire?
Hopefully not. I think they will. But hopefully not. Yeah, like I say, Arsenal've got the hardest fixtures. Liverpool, I think a lot of Liverpool's remaining 7 or 8 are away from home. I don't think they've got many at home left, or at least that's from what I understood from what Klopp said the other day. Anyway, they've got not many home games left in his post-match presser, but yeah, obviously they drew with United yesterday, which, you know, at half-time, if you'd have offered me a draw, I would have ripped your hand off. Probably would have done it before the game, but definitely at half-time after not having a shot. I know we scored one disallowed, but unfortunately, that doesn't count on the stats. Liverpool had 15. And look, they played really well. They absolutely played us off the park, but United were pathetic. Liverpool didn't really have to do anything. They were completely coasting. Half time, I'd have snapped your hand off for a draw, but 80-something minutes into the game, United are 2-1 up before obviously Wan-Bissaka goes to ground. I've seen a lot of talk about how it's a soft penalty, and okay, I get it, but I think if you go into ground there, you run the risk of Elliot, okay, he has exaggerated, he has simulated a little bit, but Wan-Bissaka's on the floor, he's gone to plant his right leg, and because Wan-Bissaka's there, he's fallen over. And it is how it is. If it was United, I'd be wanting it. It was one of them. As soon as you saw it, you were like, fucking hell, that's a penalty. And Salah tucked it away. He scored twice in 3 games against us this season. I don't think he's had one strong performance, but he just does what he does and gets on the score sheet. But that's 3 games this season. Obviously, 2 draws and a win for United. So Liverpool unable to beat this incredibly bad United side this season, which I suppose is a small silver lining for United fans at least. And obviously a huge 2 points dropped on their behalf, like you say, with City and Arsenal winning the difficult away games. Obviously City went behind, and Brighton's not an easy place to go, as we know. So, yeah, big weekend potentially as the pendulum swung the other way. I don't know. I think we're going to see many a twist and turn. I think Liverpool will be right there down to the wire, to be honest, especially because, like we've said before, unlike City and Arsenal, who could play each other next, Liverpool have got the nicety of the Europa League, where, look, they can throw it if they wanted to. They could completely switch to the 11 this week against Atalanta and just put all the eggs in the league basket. I don't think they will, because I think they'll want to win everything whilst it's Klopp's last season, everything they can. Obviously, they've still got the League Cup, Europa League, Premier League trio still on. I'm not calling it a treble, I'll call it a trio. Still on for them. Hope they end up finishing third and win it. Third and winning the League Cup, like Ten Hag in his first season, so I can laugh at them all. But we'll see. There's a long way to go yet. I do think they'll be right up there, though, because, like I say, if they wanted to, they could throw the Europa League, whereas Arsenal and City are fighting on two fronts.
They definitely are fighting on two fronts. And Stan, before we move on to Liverpool and we dive into a bit more title talk, we will speak about United and speak about their potential European ambitions. Do you think that it's safe to say now that they will be playing on Thursday nights, and it is safe to say that it will be in the Europa League and not the Conference League?
I think so. I don't know. It's actually quite tight between 6th and about 10th or something like that. Obviously, we've all got different games played and stuff. I mean, there's a chance that United end up finishing 9th. I don't think they will, because our fixtures actually between now and the end of the season are quite favourable, should we say, although that means absolutely nothing with this United side at all, because this week we were leading three times and ended up drawing two and losing one very, very late on. So in another season, United get 9 points and see all three games out. Definitely the first two get seen out. Maybe, you know, Liverpool come back for the draw, we get 7 and 9 points and we're still in the conversation for that fifth spot. But look, it's definitely done now. United are playing for pride, they're playing for positions next season, playing for, you know, not to be transfer listed, or if they are transfer listed, for a next club. So they're playing for themselves, they're playing for the badge, they're playing for the fans as well. And I mean, Erik ten Hag now is pretty much playing for the FA Cup. He's playing for his job next season, although, like we've mentioned about the landscape with managers in terms of having to buy them as well, and not only that, but just the name of manager available. I think even if United finish in the Europa League positions and didn't win the FA Cup, I still don't think it's a guarantee that he gets sacked just because of the possible replacements. Now, that could be a blessing for Ten Hag. You know, who knows, in 12 months we could be looking back saying, oh my God, as if there was chances we could sack him last season because he's turned it round. Who knows? But yeah, look, no, United, top four, top five, whatever, Champions League qualifications done, obviously Spurs and Villa. Although Villa are stuttering a little bit, obviously Spurs won't go fourth, and the gap's just too big now. I think even if United win the next seven games, which just isn't going to happen, we need Villa and/or Spurs to end up losing three of the next seven, which they just aren't going to do. So that's done. I think best we can hope for in terms of European footy is Europa League Thursday nights, and, you know, hopefully potentially an FA Cup trophy as well, which, you know, wouldn't be the worst season, but, you know, it is how it is, and we'll see what happens with Ten Hag. But yeah, for Villa and Spurs, I'd say they're fourth and fifth nailed on. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I probably would agree with that. And speaking about Ten Hag, just before I do go into that, he wouldn't be the first United manager to win the FA Cup and get the chop, would he? But then again, Stan, that was Jose Mourinho waiting in the wings. And like we said many a time on this pod, for a few different various jobs, there is no clear candidate for some of them. I think that'll probably keep Ten Hag and Pochettino both in a job. But it's hard to not agree with what you said earlier there, just because I think there is, like I said, there is no clear candidate. And I think that United are just too inconsistent, like the teams below them, your West Hams, your Chelsea's, your Brighton's, even your Wolves to an extent. Wolves could definitely finish in the conference position and no one wouldn't be surprised about it. But yeah, I do think the gap's too big. And I think that Villa could almost not really chill in the Prem, but almost rotate heavily for their European campaigns. And if Tottenham had one, and that's not a dig at Spurs, that's just genuinely saying if they had a European campaign as well, they could do the same. But now they can almost stat pad and really solidify what Ange wants to do with them and maybe take a few risks and try a few things out, because they know realistically we are probably going to be a Champions League team next year, and we can almost plan for next season during this season. And that's one of the most valuable things, Dan. It's obviously time on the training ground and Ange getting his ideas across, because he is a top coach. And I think that he genuinely... It's a big statement to make, but I think that he will probably use Spurs as a stepping stone club to a massive job, like a Liverpool job. I know that he has vocalised many a time that he is a Liverpool fan, and I really wouldn't be surprised if I managed a massive club like Liverpool one day. And he's gonna do really good things at Tottenham. I really do believe that. He's a genuine bloke, and it's a massive achievement from what he's done this season, even from a morale standpoint, just completely turning it around for Spurs and coming from as far as they have with Conte, and obviously bad vibes there in the press conference to say that it's Tottenham and they're used to losing and they've got two League Cups in 26 years. And all that is true, but Ange is trying to change that culture, and I believe slowly but surely he will, because he is a top coach. And yeah, long may it continue, but not at Tottenham for me in a selfish perspective. But in a Liverpool's perspective, Stan, they're obviously still going for the league. It's Klopp's last year. The players are going to give everything. They're fighting on both fronts as well, but they're also in a title race, so it'll be much harder for Liverpool to maintain this title push with the Europa League than it will be for, let's say, an Aston Villa who are in the Conference League and battling for that top four / top five position, because it almost looks like that it's going to be enough at this point. Hello, listeners. That music can only mean one thing. It is, of course, the bet of the week. So, starting off with the first team in the bet of the week, all 3 o'clock this week, we're going to start off in Southwest London, Brentford versus Sheffield United. I'm going to go for a Brentford match result win in that one. Then we're going to head down to Turf Moor, Burnley versus Brighton. I'm going to go for under 2.5 goals in that one. Then we're headed to the Etihad, Man City versus Luton Town. I'm going to go Man City, both teams to score, result. And then Nottingham Forest versus Wolves in our last game of the bet of the week. I'm going to go for both teams to score, no draw in that one. So just to recap, the bet of the week, Brentford to beat Sheffield United at home, Burnley versus Brighton under 2.5 goals, Man City versus Luton Town, both teams to score, result Man City, and then Nottingham Forest versus Wolves, both teams to score, no draw. And Stan, what can listeners do with that?
They can shove it up the rackers. Hello and welcome back, and it is time for Football Friends. Now, it's been a little while since this, and it's just me and Cook today. I've got three players here, three names, and I'll let him use the three lifelines as well, which we'll go through as and when he uses them, because he hasn't got Jim to bounce off with ideas and clubs and all things like that. So we'll be nice to him. So player number one started his career in 1998. And then he moved, played with Oliver Neuville, which is spelt Neville, but with a U between the E and the V to help you, in 2001. He then moved again and played with Kevin Prince-Boateng. He then moved and played with Cristiano Ronaldo, one of the GOATs of the game, guys. And then he moved again, obviously, because there's five clubs. Played with Brian Ruiz, another GOAT of the game, guys. Steve McLaren's Brian Ruiz from FC Twente. Then he moved again, and he played with Anthony Martial. Some great names in this one. And then he played for two more clubs before retiring.
Okay, so can I have the year, please, Stan, that he played with Cristiano Ronaldo?
You can. So he played with Cristiano Ronaldo. The first year he played with him, the first year he met him at the club, was 2008.
Whoa. What a horrible year. Going off the information that you presented me with there, Stan, means that he was at United at this point. Brian Ruiz, what were you doing at this point? Where were you? Were you at Fulham? Were you at Sporting? Were you with Steve McLaren? What are you doing? And then Martial, were you at Monaco? Or were you at Man United? So, KPB.
Oh. You can use all three if you wanted to, if you're struggling, because you are on your own.
You know what? I am struggling. So I'm going to use my... I'm going to use my 50-50 I'm going to use.
Okay.
So, Stan, like I said, I'm going to use my 50-50. And was Martial at Man United or was he at AS Monaco?
I can confirm that Anthony Martial played with this person at AS Monaco.
Okay. So, again, thinking out loud, Kevin Prince, he's been at a load of clubs. Ronaldo was in England at this point, meaning that he must have played with this guy at Man United. Ruiz, again, has had a Portuguese past. This is wild. He's retired as well, that's what I keep forgetting.
He is retired. So far, you've got, he started in 2001. Well, he moved with Neuville in 2001.
Yeah.
Played with Boateng, he played with Ronaldo at United. Then Brian Ruiz, then with Martial at Monaco.
Oh, I think I know who this is.
Oh, go on.
Is it Patrice Evra?
It's not Patrice. No.
Oh, no. He took Monaco, but well earlier, wasn't he?
Yeah, United signed him from Monaco.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm going to use my last lifeline. I'm a substitute because I am struggling without Jim. And I'm going to take out Brian Ruiz.
Okay. The Brian Ruiz, obviously the name I give you, it isn't, I'm not trying to trick you. I'm trying to give you basically a player who you will associate purely with one club. So I will give you Breda Hangeland.
Okay, so he's a Cottager.
Yes. United, Fulham, Monaco.
This is never Berbatov.
It is Berbatov.
God's sake.
Dimitar.
Of course, he played with Marshall at Monaco in the later era.
He did. So, 1998, he started in CSKA Sofia in his home country. Moved to Bayer Leverkusen with Oliver Neuville. Got to that. Obviously, that nearly treble-winning season. He was part of that team as a youngster. KP Boat at Spurs. Ronaldo at United. Hangeland, Fulham. Anthony Martial, Monaco. Two more clubs. And then, obviously, as we know, he's now retired. The great Dimitar Berbatov. There we go, Cut. You did get it. You used all three, but that's all right, because we'll be nice today without Jim, with nobody to bounce off. Ooh. Play number two. I hope you all got that one at home and you were all screaming about the Bulgarian beauty Dimitar Berbatov there. Play number two is also retired. The third one isn't, though, Cook, surprisingly. Well, play number two is. This guy started in 2002. But then he moved, and the first name on this list is Niko Kovac in 2004. And it's Benny McCarthy, Lasana Diarra, Park Ji-sung. Then he moved to another club. But then I'll give you the last name, and this is where he retired. He played with James Chester. Local lad from up the road, James Chester. Good lad. Great little five-a-side team there. So, Niko Kovac, 2004. Benny McCarthy, Lasana Diarra, Park Ji-sung, another club, and then he retired with James Chester.
Okay, so, yeah, the link I'm trying to make, the glaringly obvious things before I use a lifeline is that Park Ji-sung, this was probably at Man United, probably wasn't at PSV Eindhoven, which I believe he was at before United. So, I'm going to say that this is at United and lean that way.
There is another club that Park played for. This isn't a double United, so it isn't Park at United, but there is another club that he played for. Sure. After United.
Sure.
If you can remember. It'll be in there somewhere. And the club that Las Diarra played for doesn't actually exist anymore, so there's another hint for you.
So if Lasana's club doesn't exist anymore, that means that he played for Anzi Makhachkala.
There you go.
Which is correct. Excellent pronunciation on my app.
I will there say. We go.
Shit. I know who this is.
Oh, go on.
I know who this is. I'm at the door. I'm grabbing the handle. This is Chris Samba.
It is Chris Samba. Do you want to tell me why?
Okay, so...
Well, what gave it to you?
Okay, so working from back to front, like any weird way to wipe your ass. James Chester, Aston Villa. I know he was at the end of his career, he was used as a bit of a utility player, and I only know because I played 2v2 as Aston Villa and played a back three of John Terry, Chris Samba, and I want to say it was Alan Hutton or someone like that. Yeah, so the other club, I don't know. Park Ji-sung, I couldn't tell you the Park Ji-sung one. Lasana Diarra, Anzi Makhachkala, Benny McCarthy at Blackburn Rovers, and then Niko Kovac. Again, I had no idea, so I couldn't tell you the first and the Park Ji-sung one.
So he played with Niko Kovac at Hertha Berlin. That was his... He came from a club in France that I'd never heard of, so he played there at Hertha with Niko Kovac. And Park Ji-sung, actually, with a flurry of players, Cook, signed for Queen's Park Rangers around the time they got a load of money. Went to quick QPR, Park Ji-sung. Believe it or not, he did. And that's where he played with Chris Samba. But he went to another club and then came back to England where he retired at Aston Villa. So there we go, Cook. You got both.
Why do I not know that?
He did, yeah. I think he was there literally a season. And then I think he got relegated. And loads of them had, like, clauses and just fucking left. I think he retired, actually.
Was it the year they had, like, Basingwa and, like...
Yeah. Chris Samba, Basingwa, Park, Julio Cesar.
Vargas. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Charlie, that team.
Charlie
that team. That team, about 13, 14 or something, 12, 13, something like that.
Oh my god.
Yeah, Barkey at QPR.
The definition of lost our legs FC, that.
Yeah, it was as well. Barkey's legs are completely gone.
Park Ji-sung, Rio Ferdinand, Basingua, Granero.
Rio.
Joey Barton, oh aye. Just stamina, doesn't it?
Definitely.
Kagan Press.
You ready for player number three?
Yeah.
Player number three, and this guy is active, which is a rare one for me. So we'll go straight into it. This guy played with Martin Stekelenburg in 2008. He then moved and played with Raul Garcia. Then moved and played with Sadio Mane. Before meeting up with Fernando Llorente. And he's currently playing with Richie Delatt. Big United name there. Also played for Leicester.
Immediately, and this doesn't mean that I'm going the right way before anyone screams. 2008, my brain for Stekelenburg says that he was at Roma. I could be wrong there, so I'm not going to stay there. He might have been at somewhere else in the Netherlands. Raul Garcia, I associate a lot with Bilbao, but he could have been at Atleti as well. Has he played for Atleti? Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, I get him and Raul thingy mixed up. Forget his name. Don't fucking matter. Sadio Mane, again, I associate him with Southampton and Liverpool, but prior to that, it was obviously RB Salzburg. Llorente's played for some weird clubs, but he has also played for Swansea, which a lot of people forget. He's also played for Tottenham. He's played for Juventus. He's played for various teams in Spain. So, again, if I'm sticking with this, maybe Southampton went down, Swansea picked him up. But, again, this is just initial thoughts. And then Richie Delatt, I associate him with career mode on FIFA from years ago. Norwich City played for, Leicester City. And Man United, obviously. So, Stan, I'm going to use the lifeline of... I'm going to use the year, please, that he played with Sadio Mane.
Okay. I will get you that right away. So, he played with Sadio Mane in the 2014-2015 season. Just one season with him. That's when it was. 2014-2015 for your year.
Oh god, this is difficult because when did he go to Liverpool? Okay. Is this Toby Alderweireld?
It is Toby Alderweireld. Wanna tell me why?
Yeah, because weirdly the penny dropped. I was like, Llorente at Tottenham, Mane at Southampton, Raul Garcia at Atletico Madrid, and Richie Delatt at don't tell me. Antwerp.
Yes.
And then Stekelenburg at Ajax.
Ajax, yeah, that's where he started. There you go. It is Toby Alderweireld. Great, great centre-half. Centre-half that I really wanted United to sign at multiple summers. But, yeah, he had a nice settled partnership with Vertonghen there at Spurs. He was never going to move. But, yeah, it was Toby Alderweireld. So there we go. Dimitar Berbatov, Chris Samba, Toby Alderweireld.
Right, listeners, before we have to love you and leave you, we're going to speak about the breaking news from this afternoon. Everton, Stan, deducted a further 2 points in their quest for Premier League survival. It's a big blow to the Toffees, this one, and obviously it's got huge ramifications for them and Sean Dyche. They've actually dropped down now into 16th place with this deduction from 15th, and long-term, it could really impact them staying in the Premier League. But, Stan, one thing I'm going to ask you before, obviously, we get into the ins and outs of the 2 points and why they have been deducted this. Do you think that now they have been deducted this 2 points, this really throws the cat amongst the pigeons down there in terms of there's a good six or seven that could still really go down with eight games left?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely do. I think they were at risk even with... even without the minus 2 points. Obviously, it was a huge win at the weekend in a six-pointer against Burnley, which they won 1-0, fully deserved the 3 points. But I think even with that 3 points, you know, they were at risk. I suppose that 3 points so vital now because the minus two that has followed so quickly after that, obviously for more breaches of profit and sustainability rules, you know, 2 points seems, again, a little bit arbitrary, a little bit plucked out of thin air. Why was it 10 6 months ago and it's two now and then it was six, lowered to six? Are they going to appeal it? I don't know. But again, similar to what we said about the 10 at the time, I think the good thing about Everton is now is that they are 16th and they've still got six, seven games left of the season to put this right. I think if this happened to them just before the final game week and really threw the cat amongst the pigeons and brought them right down there, they would feel a lot harder done by. But I suppose that, you know, the thing is that there's still best part of 20 points to play for. So they can't sulk. I think, is it Chelsea the next game? So they've got to look to the next game. And, you know, I'm sure we'll see the reaction. I'm sure we'll see the PL corrupt signs the next time they're at Goodison, as we do, which is brilliant. And yeah, look, obviously it's a massive blow for them, but look, they've had minus six at points this season and they're still not even in the relegation zone. So is that minus eight altogether? And they're still 3-4 points from safety. So you've got Luton, obviously Forest, Burnley, Sheffield United still below them. There's still that bit of a buffer. And like I say, they can't let the Reds drop. They've got to crack on. And I do actually think they'll be safe, Cook. I mean, if you're looking at that now, obviously, like I said, Everton won. Luton with a huge win there against Bournemouth. Sheffield United, obviously, with a really late point at home to Chelsea. Who do you think is going to be the bottom three? Do you think Everton are safe no matter what?
I don't think Everton are safe no matter what, because I think that they're too inconsistent for a start. They don't have goals in the team. And the people that can score the goals are injured more often than not in Calvert-Lewin. I think that Sheffield United, I know they drew with Chelsea at the weekend, they're basically down. I think Burnley are basically down as well. I think it's who's the worst out of Luton, Forest, Everton, Brentford and Crystal Palace. Probably I would go as far to even say, because they're only a point in ahead of Brentford with a game in hand. I'd say it's definitely all those teams that I've just mentioned, bar Burnley and Sheff, that are vying for that 18th position, or should I say vying to avoid it. But I don't think the term as well, the too good to go down, I don't think anybody's too good to go down. I think that, I just think for Everton, it's dangerous this. And I know that they've argued that, I know it's basically, long story short with this, Everton have said, yeah, we hold our hands up, we have done wrong, but why couldn't this have waited till next season? And they wanted to basically take this 2-point deduction next season. Their argument is, why has ours been rushed through, basically? So I can understand, but if you look at it in black and white terms, they've broken the rules. They knew they broke the rules. And Everton's difference is that they've actually tried to hide it in other things, i.e. the pandemic and building their stadium, whereas Nottingham Forest and even Leicester now, if they come up, they're going to have to hold our hands up and say, yeah, we cheated, our fault. Whereas Everton actively lied about it. It's a similar thing with the Ivan Toney and Tonali thing. One person lied about it and one person fessed up to it straight away, and then leniency was sold. But yeah, long story short, Stan, I don't think they're too good to go down. I think the team that will be joining Burnley and Sheffield United, I genuinely believe it will be Brentford. And I say this because I think that slowly but surely, week by week, they are looking less and less like the Brentford that we all know and love, to a point. I know a lot of people don't have a lot of bad things to say about Thomas Frank, definitely in a professional sense in terms of his tactics and the way he sets his teams up. Might be a bit of a weird guy, but at the end of the day, he's a decent manager and he can manage at a better level than he's at right now. But yeah, I think it'll be Sheffield United bottom, then Burnley, and then yeah, I think it'll be Brentford, unfortunately. And I think they'll have to sell some of the stars and maybe regroup. But last thing, Stan, before we finish up on the pod, obviously Everton have had this deduction. What do you think this does for the players, just quickly before we finish up? And do you think that this is maybe an albatross over the red and just thinking like, geez, like this is more pressure for us to actually perform and get a result, whereas there was enough pressure anyway, and now we've got this looming over our heads to think that, oh, now is an extra 2 points, so now we've almost got to get an extra win to accommodate for that.
Yeah, maybe. But like I say, I think they can't view it as that. I think the fact is it's happened. It's already happened this season. And when it's happened this season, they've not been in the relegation zone. It's happened now, and they're still not in the relegation zone. I think probably losing 2 points after that six-pointer against Burnley is probably the best time to do it. Look, okay, you've ended up only getting 1 point, but Burnley have still got zero. So you've still actually earned 1 point on Burnley. Okay, Luton and Sheffield United got, you know, a point and 3 points respectively on the board, but Forest lost. They're still in there. And the fact is that it's still in Everton's hands ultimately. Look, the 3 or 4 points clear from the drop. And if they, it goes without saying, do better than the four below them, it's not like there's three and they're right on the precipice. They have got that extra buffer too. If they do better than those 14 below them, they'll stay up. It's not like Everton now have to overtake anybody. It's just, look, keep your head above the water. Use this minus 2 points to galvanise you. The fans will be right behind you because they feel really hard done by. And look, use it to come together to get some points on the board. And I think they will. I think Sean Dyche has got that siege mentality. I think Goodison's great for it. I think the Everton fans are great for it too. And I think they'll stay up. And I personally hope they stay up. Look, I think the Premier League's better off for having Everton. They're a great club, huge English club, and they've got some great fans that are absolutely off their heads. But you know, that's what we want in the Premier League. I think the Premier League would be a lot worse without Everton in it.
Yeah, and then just very last thing, just before we wrap up from me, is just that a lot of people are probably thinking, oh, you mentioned Leicester there, Cookie, and what's their situation? So just briefly with Leicester is, their books haven't become public just to the Premier League because they're actually a Championship team at this point. And from a legal perspective, they were told that they don't actually have to show the Premier League their books until they're actually in the competition. So Leicester, for all we know, could have definitely broke profit and sustainability rules, which is they probably have if they're going to be this shifty about not handing in the books, because if they had nothing to hide, then why would they not just show the Premier League? And I think that if they are to come up into the Premier League, I think that a lot of people believe that they will start on a minus point. And I think that we're now in the era of fines are no longer a viable way of punishing teams. And so far, because we've not got to the Manchester City amount of cases, is the small minnow teams are suffering more than the big boys. And yeah, we'll see how it pans out. Right, listeners, just winding down here, just to let you know where you can find us when we're not making pods. So across Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, we are available under the handle Cookie Podcast, but in the word cookie, it's 3 O's. So it's COOOKIE Podcast for TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you don't have time to listen to a full pod in its entirety, just type in on YouTube Cookie Podcast Clips. But if you do have the time, search in wherever you get your podcast. That's the way the cookie crumbles. Leave a 5-star review. Pinch your significant other's phone. Give us a 5-star. Leave a comment. It really helps us get up the algorithm. And that's the way the cookie crumbles.